Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh-Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Let's get right back to our discussion with APOL.
I do, you know, want to talk about the other thing that I'm not even sure what to call it, the creative workshops.
The power of new.
The power of new.
Yes.
Okay. So tell us about the power of new. Is this a project? Is this a, what is
the power of new is about 30 years worth of trying to share just what you're soliciting here, creative process.
Okay.
Knock on wood, you know, they say to don't ever, never say never, like right. It was a Sean Connery doing a James Bond at his midlife crisis. So many people would ask, oh, you know, how do you do that? How do you come up with the melodies and all that kind of stuff? You know, why are you doing this? And I used to blow it off. Mm-hmm. And I was in Ocala and was actually hired as the resident conductor for the Ocala Civic Theater because they did a lot of musicals. But Central Florida Symphony, which was in Ocala, was also playing a big orchestra piece of mine. And of course, the theater people had no idea that I did that. So they went to the concert and they heard the piece. And again, the questions came up, you know, how do you do that? Where do you get your inspiration?
Right.
Yada, yada, yada.
All the stuff I've been asking you, yeah.
And I said, you know, it's time to stop blowing that off and to actually sit down and talk about it. So the theater sponsored, I think it was 2 hours on Saturday morning for about 4 weeks. And we had a little round table and I went through some exercises and talked about things that I did to help keep me from getting writer's block because I've never had writer's block.
That's amazing. Wow.
You know, if I need something done on a deadline, I do it on a deadline. I don't know how it happens, but it just happens. There's that free flow mm-hmm. has never been one of my nemeses. Mm-hmm. So I took the students through some of the processes and the ways, particularly once you get the idea how to move it into the other side of the brain mm-hmm. so that you can get the right team together and you know, communicate the inspiration and communicate the subtext, mm-hmm. because that's so important with art. And it was very popular, and they loved it. And I did a second session a few months later and then started getting calls from other arts groups and science centers. I was doing it at science centers. I was doing them for corporate retreats. And kept building on it, did a few at some universities. Back then, they were open to that idea. They're not so much anymore. I don't know why.
I don't either. That's weird.
Academia has kind of changed. They want a syllabus that tells exactly what I'm going to do from day to day.
Oh, yeah. That's so...
And I said, I can't do that. It's a creativity class.
That's what I heard from every teacher I've ever talked to is that's impossible.
I said, you know, it's designed to not know what's
right.
coming
right.
next. You should expect the unexpected and then learn how to deal with the unexpected.
Yeah.
That's how you get new ideas. But over the years, I kept doing it. And then I was asked by a friend of mine who's the dean of a little college down in Costa Rica, Richard Cucciara, to do the creativity class for a summer retreat that he was hosting down there. And they really loved it. And that's where the PhD came from. You know, Richard said, this is marvelous program. He says, how much material do you have? He says, put it together in kind of a thesis format. And he said, we'll grant you an honorary doctorate based
on what
we've experienced, mm-hmm. You coming down here and doing this class for us. So, I've, you know, reworked it again a little bit. Again, the Arts Council here has been very generous, and they gave me a grant to do some new brochures, which I've sent out, and I gave a couple, kind of starter versions of the new ones at the Restart Center. I think it's on Mithoffer or Post Road.
Yeah.
I did some sections of it at a couple of the churches here in town, because it does deal with our spiritual side, to how that plays.
Oh, yeah.
You like to pretend that's not.
Oh, no, that's front center with a lot of what I like to talk to people about. Now, I do get some artists who don't want to talk about that, but yeah, I feel like spirituality is a huge part of creativity.
And but it's in there. It's part of it.
They are inextricable in my life and in my viewpoint. So I'm happy to hear that.
Arts connect all those things up: our physical, our intellectual, our emotional, and our spiritual lives. Mm-hmm. It sort of brings them into a congruous harmony, unlike anything else on the planet.
Yeah, and if you look at, you know, historically speaking, I mean, you can look back at whether it's music or visual art or written works were often sponsored by, you know, traditional church, you know, situations. Traditional religions. I'm a more of a open kind of open-ended spirituality-minded person. I don't adhere to any one particular religion. That's probably because of my anthropological background. I studied world religions, and so it's like I like that part. I like this part. I like this piece. You know, and I cobble together my belief system. But I mean, if you think about it, the arts have traditionally been supported back in the day. By religious organizations, and so a lot of the most famous world-renowned art, whether it's music or paintings or whatever that we have, were supported by funds from religious institutions, and we still hold these iconic paintings and
interesting
music.
Story on that. I was in Buenos Aires, and my hosts down there were giving me a tour, and we went to the famous Casa Rosada. And there's a cathedral right across the street that is just absolutely beautiful. But a lot of the paintings are actually cultural, you know.
Right.
Victory of San Martin, you know, those kind of things. But it was still in the church. And we came out of the church, and I think I had made a comment about, you know, this would seem more like something for a history museum than a church. And so we're coming out, and very Catholic country, and a very spiritual country, Argentina. And I think my hosts were wanting to pin me down a little bit. And they said, well, what's your religion? What do you believe in? And I'm sure they were thinking I was going to say something about, you know, oh, you know, I'm just a spiritualist, or, you know, New Ager or something like that.
Right.
And I think I threw them off a little bit. I said, I believe in all of them. I believe in all of them. They all come from a very pure searching place that in their infancy and in their instigation from that great cosmic consciousness, they emerge for a very real reason. I said all of the great religions do. And so you have to believe in that process of where those religions are coming from. Now, we can intellectualize our way in and out of all kinds of things, but those things are forming. The core of our culture.
The core, and that's a very anthropological way of looking at that question, and that's basically how I answer it too, because one of the things that studying anthropology and world religions taught me was that, you know, although any particular organized religion may say, we are the way, the only path, that simply is what they all say. And in my mind, that, you know, that makes me think, well, that's just their interpretation of whatever the ultimate cosmic overall entity or thing out there is. I feel like you take any of those paths, one way, one path, one journey, any of them is going to get you to the ultimate same place, goal. You know, whether you want to call it nirvana or heaven or whatever, it is, all paths lead to the same thing, for lack of a better word, in this moment.
A spiritually transfigured Franciscan monk and Buddhist monk understand each other much better than a lot of local church leaders.
Yes, and even
going from one Protestant version to the
organized
other,
religion, you know, the big three anyway, any organized religion, and, you know, according to what I learned across time and space by studying world religions, any organized religion at some point, even in its inception maybe, but at some point will become a political entity. And that's where I don't attend a church because, well, COVID-19, I'm with my health problems, I'm not attending anything. But even before that, I wasn't a church goer because that didn't work for me. You know, that was too much on the small, tiny, tight scale. And my ideas and thoughts about religion and spirituality are on a, that, like I said, that larger global, all paths lead to one, you know, that's, so, you know,
music does that. You know, talking about being in the room with live music, the reason we do that, it seems an odd thing to do, but the reason we do that is on the subliminal level, on the core level, down in your cells, we're all having the same experience. Mm-hmm. We might intellectually try to block it or say, you know, I didn't get my nap today. I don't want to be here. You know, that was a stupid show. You know, why'd you drag me to string quartets? Mm-hmm. I don't even know what they are or whatever. But when that music starts, unless you're really actively resisting it, everyone in that room, performers alike, are having the same deep emotional experience. Now, you talk about binding people together. Yep. There's nothing binds us like those experiences.
I agree, and I feel like that is, it's almost as though we're all in that moment existing on a particular vibratory plane almost. Mm-hmm. And it is spiritual, and it's music induced or music led, music guided. I you know, like you said, it's in our cells. There's something about that, and you feel it. That's why I use the phrase vibratory plane, because it's a feeling. It's not just a sensation. It's more than that. It's beyond
back
that.
To process a little bit. Early on, for some strange reason, it like lightning, it struck me the responsibility you have as a composer to understand that and guide that ethically. Mm-hmm. Even in a show like Ted Bundy, mm-hmm. even like the show like Love Ted. I grew up in a time, and this is one of the reasons I delayed going to college. I ended up at University of Houston, as I think you may mm-hmm. have seen on the resume, mm-hmm. but that was like a decade after I left, mm-hmm. you know, because the universities were creating a kind of academic art that I don't think was taking that responsibility seriously. Mm-hmm. All they were trying to do was shock people and fill them full of anxiety,
yeah.
with dissonances and sounds and just bizarreness. And I've written some, as you know, I've said to you, I think some very weird things. I've done some very bizarre composing. I'm not afraid to use those elements, mm-hmm. but the responsibility of how I use them and how I place them and how I resolve them, I take very, very seriously when I create art.
It and that comes through in what you do. You feel that as a listener. And again, I am unmusical. I can't play an instrument. I wouldn't know the first thing about a note or a chord. I don't, you know, there's nothing about music that I understand or am in any way versed in. But the feeling I get when I listen to your music is that there is part of that is in there. Part of what you just talked about comes through, that you have provided something that, well, this is going to sound a little crazy, but I can feel it and take it in without fear. There's nothing. Does that sound a little weird? I mean,
yeah, because it's a natural part of our existence. Mm-hmm. I'm not overriding mm-hmm. That inspiration with too much. I mean, you know, you have to kind of clean it up and make it legible, but I'm not overriding it with my intellectual point of view.
Right.
Most of what I write,
there's nothing that comes across as this guy's trying too hard, you know, which is, yeah. I've heard a lot of the kind of music that you're talking about, the academic music where, you know, that person's final, I use the word thesis or dissertation. I'm not sure what it's called in music, but that final project, that final piece, mm-hmm. I remember very clearly hearing one. I went to one guy's playing of it, production of it, you know, because that was part of his degree, was to put it on the stage, you know, out there. And it was an unpleasant experience because it just worked and just convoluted every sensation that I think of and feel about music. It was just beyond dissonance.
Happened, you know, and not all situations, but you know, a lot of that sociopathic pain mm-hmm. that debilitates us from accessing the true stream of consciousness that wants to be born mm-hmm. to make the world beautiful and whole and aware, even though sometimes terrifying. I mean, mm-hmm. the world still is violent. Mm-hmm. You know, volcanoes, hurricanes. Mm-hmm. I lived in Florida, hurricanes, you could mm-hmm. see the damage. So nature is not always benign
gentle, yeah.
but it is real.
Mm-hmm. And there's a truth in it.
And the sociopath wants to take away our reality.
Yes.
Our natural reality and force us into their personal reality.
Yeah. That's exactly how.
And that's wrong.
Yeah. But you just put your finger on exactly what I experienced. I experienced a composition that came to me as a manipulation, a perversion of that natural truth and purity and honesty of even the negative parts of human existence and nature. Mm-hmm. I mean, the music that I would hear watching a volcano erupt, the internal music I would hear of a hurricane or something, may be frightening, it may be horrific, but it's true. It's honest, right? What I experienced and what I think we're talking about is this other kind of composition and kind of academic push the boundaries kind of musicality isn't that. It is a perversion of that. It is a twisting of that. And I feel like that's not, I don't want to listen to that stuff. You know?
Yeah, ultimately, if art tries to manipulate you, it will die out.
It will. Yeah. It won't work.
It won't work.
I feel like that's what we have to look for and try to create in our artistic endeavors is positivity, truth, hope, and honesty. And you certainly have been doing that. And I'm back to real stuff now. I just am thrilled that you were willing to spend so much time talking with me. And I really look forward to editing this into several parts because I could talk to you all day. I really do feel that way.
We'll plan next partay coffee and we'll chat.
And I do want to talk to Brandon sometime. You know, he can, if you know, you could share my email address with him and he can send me all that peremptory, you know, any files.
He's also a fascinating character with a life story that you'll find extremely dramatic.
And you know, you've obviously learned from me in the off camera and on camera parts of our conversation. It is the journey. The mm-hmm. art, the journey of life that has become, if you're an artist, if you're creative, an arts journey. Because if you are a creative person, what happens in your, quote, real life becomes your arts journey. I mean, for most of us, I've
learned. Joseph Campbell says, it's our hero's journey.
Thank you for bringing that up, because that is a very, for some of us who've been beat down in certain ways, identifying yourself in a positive way, you know, like I try to use the word domestic violence survivor, not victim, you know, try to turn that into a positive sound. Hero's journey is a tough one for some of us to enunciate, but it's that classic definition of hero. It's the protagonist in the story, you know, who
of all the hero's journeys where they've been tied to the rock or you know, locked in the cave or you know, escape was impossible.
Yes
But because they're heroes,
they figure out a way to get
through. Emerge.
They turn the shield onto Medusa's, so Medusa's reflected,
exactly.
You know, that to me is the iconic, you know, how am I going to get out of this one? Here's a shield, you know, and yes, it was given to him by a goddess. And so that helps, you know, it helps to have a goddess on your side, you
but
know,
that's being open to those forces. That goddess is, you know, is a metaphor for the forces that we've been talking about that you have to open yourself to be a conduit of.
Yes.
You know, and you know, artists' ego, they say artists have egos. I always loved actors who had big egos. You know why? Because the bigger their ego, the more they could let go of it.
Yes.
Become the character totally. Yes. And then recapture themselves when they left the stage.
It's the small actor who never gets out of the way in a movie. You know, it's the actor that's always the actor. You see the actor on in a film, not the character. That's, you know, I believe that's very true too.
So if you can give yourself up to being that character, as great actors will do, as your De Niro's and Streep's, you know, are just such masters, no wonder they get paid millions of dollars. They're worth it to totally empty themselves and fill themselves with another character as a profession. You don't think that's hard?
No, I think it's very hard. I think it would be very hard to.
So I try to do the same. I try to empty myself, get out of the way. And that's why the music is so eclectic.
Yeah.
Because I don't always know what's coming down that pathway.
Yeah.
And it can be disturbing to me personally, like Love Ted. Or it could be exhilarating to me personally, like the Serenade. And I am at the beck and call of the muse, as you might say.
Well, the final products are amazing, and I appreciate talking with you. And, you know, don't be surprised if I hound you to come back and talk more, or at least, you know, even if it's just private conversation, you know, because I feel now that we are friends. I always say that at the end of an interview. It's like, oh, I have a new friend, you know. So, thank you for making my day. And Brandon, thank you so much for giving us all this
time. Our engineer.
Yes. All this time. And I've told A-Paul that I want to reach out with you through email to get you on the schedule to be interviewed, because I just have to know more about the novel and your life and everything. So be prepared. You're on deck somewhere in the future.
Well, you should be prepared, man. Just so you know.
I'm ready. I'm ready. I have purple hair. I'm ready. I mean,
This has been At the Round Table with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Round Table.